The award-winning A Black Executive Perspective podcast presents BEP Live. Hosted by Chris P. Reed and Tony Tidbett, where uncomfortable conversations take center stage. So, let's go there. What uncomfortable conversation are we having tonight?
I want to welcome you again this week to another episode. First of all, I missed y'all last week. That's what's up. Tony held it down. I appreciate it. But we're coming to you live like we do every Tuesday at this time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, 5 Pacific. Welcome to BEP Live on A Black Executive Perspective. I'm your host, Chris P. Reed. And we're here to cut through the noise and get straight to what matters: power politics, leadership, culture, economics, and the moment shaping our lives right now. No filters, no safe takes, just honest dialogue and real accountability. And what we're talking about tonight is something that I'm excited that I will not be talking about alone. We have a oldie but goodie as far as friend. I got the pleasure of having somebody ride side saddle with me, who's the co-host this evening, and that is Miss Felicia Smith. So Hello. We want to definitely give it up for her at Join the Climb, you know what I'm saying, on all social channels. Check her out. She got a nice thing going on. But Felicia, happy to see you here. And I know you wanted to jump on. Okay, yeah. That's what's up.
Let's go.
It was a great time last time. It was wonderful. And so I'm always worried about running folks off. You know what I'm saying? I got a little insecurity like that. So you came back. Hey, you're here now. It's too late.
So, I'm here. I'm ready.
But you know what? When you hit me up and you were like, hey, you know, I don't know if, you know, this is something that we could cook with, but selective outrage. And so is the strategy for equality really working? And then you gave me a couple of, you know, different things. But tell me kind of what you see in that regard and what you want to set the table with this evening.
You know, we have this conversation so often in the Black community, particularly about how we move change forward. And oftentimes it feels like very much so that it's selective outrage, meaning there's an area that we target or focus on and say, we're doing this thing. We'll talk a little bit about the Target boycott tonight. But then you always ask yourself the question, like, how did we get here and not here? Additionally to the outrages is then there's all this like shame and bashing and all these things around this outrage that we've decided to target it. And I feel like it's become this cultural thing that's become less positive, more negative than positive when it comes to us trying to drive change forward. And I think there's a couple ways to do it. So I really want us to have the conversation about selective outrage and how we at least try to change the narrative there. And how we just do it more responsibly, if anything, right? Because I feel like the whole, like, I'm going to shame you or bash you because you went to the Target, I'm going to tell you you're not Black, all that stuff, it's not helpful, right? Like, so how do we do it in a way that's helpful? And how do we move the needle forward? And then let's arm ourselves in truth about what worked in the past and what's working today. Because oftentimes there's a narrative about things that don't apply to this moment or we're applying falsely.
So let me say this. Obviously, if you just understand simple physics, it's much easier to walk downstairs than upstairs, run downhill than uphill, and it's easy as hell to punch down. So what a lot of people tend to do from a gravity perspective is they lazy and they like to punch down. They like to shame and wag their finger, you know what I'm saying, like the old lady at church. It's a situation where it's easy to pull out different nuances or different deficiencies that people have as opposed to lifting them up. One thing that I can say as a young man, young Black man, I was always in a presence of individuals who could tell me what not to do. Don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. But nobody wanted to take the responsibility or authority to tell me what you should be doing besides go to school, get good grades.
Yes.
People will say that. That's the easy. Go to school. You need your education. Blah, blah, blah. Never told me why. Everybody hated math. Never could explain why math was going to play out later. You know, that kind of stuff. But it was more of the, this is what we shouldn't do, couldn't be, weren't supposed to do, as opposed to that wind beneath my wings type situation. And I would love to know your experience. Sometimes with family, sometimes with an auntie or somebody like that, they might be the person that's like, don't let them tell you, don't do this, don't do it. But society as a whole, it just becomes and I don't know if it's cultural, if it's regional, or if white folks is doing this too, where so many people are telling you what you shouldn't go to school for and can't be.
I think it's a mix. And you know what I think it comes from? People know how to say what not to do because they don't know how to tell you what to do. So we're not even informed on the other side. We just know so-and-so said you're not supposed to do this thing.
Right, right, right.
So you can't do it. I'll give you a random example that has nothing to do with this. Growing up, we could not use the word, this is random, pregnant. We had to say she's having a baby. Why? That was like one of the dumbest things, right? But my granny, who was raised during the 1900s, was like, you say having a baby, you shouldn't use that word. There was no logic behind it. That's something that somebody said to her that stuck. And I think even now when people tell us like, you shouldn't do this thing or you shouldn't be doing it, if you ask them why, they cannot tell you why. They can't even base it in a fact. It's just somebody said it, it sound good. So that's what I'm going to tell you what to do. And we just got to learn the other side. We don't take the time to understand why we're telling someone do not. And then when we're saying don't do this, what are we telling them to go to? We don't do that well.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we selectively hold on to the bad tradition, or we don't hold on to traditions that we should. It's funny that you say that. I was in a meeting 3 weeks ago, and the woman on the call, there's a bunch of people on the call, and she said, well, Chris, I don't want you to I don't want to make it seem like I'm calling you a liar. And then she goes into this, that. And when she finished, it was three of us on the call, but it's like 21 people on the call. And when she finished, I said, well, we call it telling stories. We don't say liar.
Correct.
And and the black folks died laughing.
You could not say that.
Yeah, you're telling the story.
Unless you want to wash your mouth out with soap.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's those things, that sage wisdom, right? Those little, because it's power in the tongue. And, you know, words do matter. I think that the one thing that I've realized from coaching individuals, both in athletics and in business, is everybody is with you until you introduce the concept of work.
Mm.
And so when we think about some of these traditions that have been passed on to us, we came from a legacy and a lineage of hardworking people. I mean, kink to kink, where you can't see when you get up and then you can't see when you go in from work because the sun is gone. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a situation where those folks work so hard and they did it to give us a leg up or give us an opportunity. I think we may have gotten too big for our britches, like my granny said. You know what I'm saying? We may have come too far and think everything is cool. And then when these moments happen where it's thrown in our face that you not like us, you don't want. I just heard a story recently about an Asian police officer in the New York City area that had years ago had killed a black person of interest and was put on trial, and the Asian community was protesting because if he was white, he wouldn't be treated like this. Not because the person was dead. Not because the person was dead. The outrage and the vitriol was, hold up. If I was white, we wouldn't even be here.
Now you know.
See what I'm saying?
Now you know.
You see what I'm saying?
I want to tell the agents in that case, get off of my line with that one. Get off of my line, man.
What is we doing? So, in the concept of how we see things and how we compare ourselves, we also have to. There's a balance, and this is the tough part of raising children, especially raising black children. How much do I give them and expose them to, so they realize we too can have and should be?
Yeah.
And how much do I hold back? To where when the world does that to them, they not overwhelmed and stunned. And me being a girl dad, I'm very sensitive. My wife is like, I'm not a big hugger and all this and all that. And I'm like, look, because I take selective no's with them. It'll be a random no. They be like, Dad, can I? No, you good. I need them to get accustomed to these no's. Because when the world do it, the world is going to be bad with it.
But Chris, we're seeing that right now, right? If you think about what's going on out of, you know, Howard University and 500 students who were on the rolls, they disenrolled last week because they didn't pay 50% of their tuition. So they were like, just had this, okay, by July, this date, if you don't pay 50% of your tuition, we're just going to take you off the rolls. And a lot of students said they were reaching out to the school didn't respond. And all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, they were no longer enrolled in college. And the meltdowns that were happening from these students who had not experienced, to your point, that type of rejection, and it made me think that exact same thing, like what it means for things to happen when it's not fair, how to deal with it. And you could tell it was their very first time in the amount of anguish and just all the things. It was amazing. It was like, wow, like Because we don't, because they're not prepared. They haven't seen no like that before. They haven't.
Right.
That's probably their very first and defining core moment rejection they're going to have in their life. And to your point, like, how do you prepare them for that? Or do you even want to? Or do they experience and now they're devastated? It's been amazing to watch, to your point.
It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act for multiple reasons. And as an economic historian, one of the things is we don't have as many children based off of economics and other things. And people are more self, I don't want to do that to people, but people are more about themselves and about their grind and about they, you know, what they're trying to accomplish and goals and this and that, right? Well, what happens is when you don't have a series of four of us in a one bedroom, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
when you gotta figure out who's gonna eat the last bit of cereal or the last piece of milk, it ain't even necessarily a poverty thing. But when you have larger families, you learn cooperation. You learn sharing, you learn understanding and working within a system. And because you got a lot of these only children or these, you know, they get whatever because there's no scarcity.
Yeah.
So therefore it's enough.
Correct.
And the ability for them to bounce back.
But when it's not, it's
you ain't lying. Yeah, ain't no hand-me-downs when it's just you. It's
correct. Correct. You know it hits different when it's not. Yeah. It's been, to your point, it's been interesting to watch because that also is a thing when it comes in selective outrage. And we're asking like, well, you know, why is it different? And we're talking about, you know, Montgomery boy, Buscott and all this other stuff. The time is very different. And so what we were able to accomplish then, I'm not saying we can't accomplish it now, but we have to reimagine what it looks like because it's not going to look like that, I don't think. I think that that was a defining moment, time and space, but the moment in time and space we are looks so vastly different. We have to reimagine what that looks like in today's landscape.
One of the things that happens, if Oberyn is on the chat, hit me up on the chat, but one of our most famous stories, we had a very big company, and it's a cat. His name's D. Will, and D. Will is rising the ladder. I mean, he is going up the ladder, and I'm like, dang, dude, getting it. And I'm applauding him. I'm applauding the brother. He's getting it for real. And so what ended up happening was it was a dude that was coming up behind him that started trying to run them same plays, which makes sense. But they had shut all them doors, Felicia.
I'm about to say, maybe not.
Yeah. Like, oh, you got us, D. Will.
How well he was doing.
Man, exactly. Exactly. They was like, so once again, they had tiger-proofed the course on you. Sometimes we have to come up with these new strategies, techniques, and tactics because they've seen that play before and have put in guardrails. Same situation all with right. the voting and all that other stuff. You know what I'm saying? We can't just go back to what, you know, Medgar Evers and all these folks did, because once they got away with it, they was like, dang, they got us this time. Not again. Like George Bush say, fool me once, shame on me, fool me. Well, yes. Whatever they say, you know what I'm saying?
Correct.
So it's one of those deals. We got to be more creative and innovative with our approach to how we progress.
Yes.
Because it's about progression. Let me ask you this, though. Let me challenge you in this regard. I'm assuming you're not moving backwards. I'm assuming you cooler now than you was 40 years, 30 years ago. 31 years when you was born 31 years ago. You done did what you were supposed to do. You done did what you were supposed to do, and you there. How do you stay hungry and motivated with a full tummy?
So, and this therein lies the challenge. I think the thing is, I stay motivated and hungry because I remember a time when. Right. I remember when it was not there. And I have parents and grandparents who I know understand that. Right. So I remember a time when. The challenge is we don't all remember a time when. To your point, our children, there was never a time when. So I stay hungry because I know what it looks like to be hungry. I know what it looks like to go without. I know what it looks like to not have a thing. So I work hard because I know it ain't but a couple steps always to the left. But to your question, but for my son who's 10, he would have never experienced without. So how does he stay hungry? I don't know, right? Because he was never hungry to know what it is to be. So that, I mean, I don't know for that piece. I know how I do it, but how do we teach the next generation of students who, you know, because we were able to do better in our lives, we provided them better, they don't know what it is to be hungry.
And you said something about symbolic victories and systemic change. But let me keep it on this family dynamic because I'm assuming we may have similar conversations in this regard. It is an uphill climb for me to have conversations with my mama about my baby because we don't live like that no more, mama. Like, you need to do this with her. You need to, she needs to be cutting grass and she's a girl. She don't need to be out. It's Texas. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but her thought process of how it was, you know, when she was young, like you said, she could still remember those moments and this and that. And her fear motivates her to not want to. I don't know if I want to. Is fear a good motivating factor or is ambition a better motivating factor? Because as a society, as a community, as the Black community, we see so many elements from the music videos to the Instagram posts and all everything is now about ambition. It's about flossing and stunting and we good. Even when we ain't. It's just a moment in time. Like, let me throw on this all white and go to this all white party. You got one white, you bought a whole white outfit for one party. You know
what I'm saying? Correct.
And so that's not a fear dynamic. That's a stunt ambitious dynamic. I would like to be at all white parties every weekend type of vibe. Do we need to pick a lane or how do we elicit the concept of somebody because they living high on the hog? And I can't convince my kid that somebody gonna come take this. I can't convince my kid that don't go home. She went home. I told her she went home for the summer. Like, listen, don't ask nobody about no electric vehicles. They don't have electric vehicles. Just don't. It's okay. Don't bring that shit up. Don't bring it up. Okay. You just go to
nobody care about that. Nobody care about no electric vehicle. You trying to just get the regular gas.
You can't
afford all of that. It's gonna bring my electricity bill up.
So when they get to complaining about gas prices, don't think you done came with an idea that's gonna bring everybody to the 20%. No.
Don't. You haven't revolutionized, baby.
She
want people.
She like, oh, maybe they don't know. Maybe they're unaware. Poor, you know, bless her heart. So, is it a situation where how do we take victories without letting the victories consume our mentality as to what the world really is about?
You know, I don't know. I mean, Chris, honestly, I think a little fear is good.
Okay.
25% because it's almost like a reminder. And so, you know, we had this long conversation, as a matter of fact, with some coworkers about that balance for kids. And one of my coworkers said she actually takes her daughter back to where she grew up, show her like, hey, I know you live in this big, beautiful house and you see the electric costs, all this stuff, but there's a subset of the world that doesn't live like that. And you have to understand that what you are experiencing isn't everyone's reality, right? And letting them understand that there's a different side, not necessarily that they can be that, but there's more in the world besides just what you see. And also, everybody you see online that's flossing, that has the rented electronic car, or has, to your point, the white outfit with the tags tucked in because they're trying to take it back to the store, like, that's not real. Also, what is real and lasting is only what you build. So if you're not building anything, if you're not doing it, if you're not going for it, then it doesn't happen. Like, just being ambitious alone without work is not going to get you there. You got to be hungry, and it might not be hungry where you've ever been starving, but you got to be hungry enough to know that I want the next thing. And I think a little bit of that is fear. And I think that's why this generation is known as a generation of anxiety. A lot of them suffer from anxiety because they have not experienced a thing, but they're afraid of the thing that they haven't experienced. So they get anxious in crowds. They get, so I think even though we're trying to protect them from the fear aspect, they're still dealing with lots of anxiety in a way that the past generations did not, because a lot of the things that they're nervous about or afraid about or anxious about, we did experience it. We got through it and we moved. And I feel like they just haven't had the experience because we've sheltered them because of the things that we went through in some ways.
So let me ask you this then. How do we choose the recipient of our vitriol? Because one thing I was thinking about a couple weeks ago, I was on vacation last week, and one of the things I was thinking about was the fact that, okay, it is my belief, and you can educate me here, it is my belief that Target made some comments that they were going to do X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And then they fell short of those comments. And so because they signed up for something, they effed around and found out. Okay. But I don't also want to get into a situation where I'll just pick Kmart because they don't exist anymore. Okay. Kmart was quiet. And so therefore, they still get all the customers because they never promised me anything and broke my heart.
Therein lies my dilemma. Therein lies my dilemma. Can we be honest for a second? We on the BB? Can we be honest?
Yeah, that's my dilemma.
Listen, I was a Target girl through and through.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Target went together real bad. Like we were a thing, right?
Yeah, my mama called it Target. You know
what
I'm saying?
Right. Me and Target went together real bad. She was my number one girl, right?
Right.
And the thing about it is, and no one has been able to show me where Target actually changed their commitment. They changed the wording of their commitment. They can no longer use DE&I, so they took away that. And all the big posters they put up to display it, they no longer did. The commitments, however, for a lot of the Black businesses associated to Target remained. And a lot of them actually suffered when we pulled out of Target because the Tabitha Browns, who had 1 year on her contract, the Kalona Barfields, all of these people who had deals, there's another deodorant company, all these people who had just gotten deals in Target. Now the Black community decided to draw from it from whatever reason we thought. But to your point, so now all of them are left hanging because we don't like the way that they move with the administration. So now we're shopping at Kmart, where none of those, to your point, Kmart hadn't made that commitment to those Black companies.
Nothing. And gave me damn nothing.
Correct. And so that was my initial, like, I don't know how this makes sense because we are disincentivizing the person who had an agreement and then incentivizing the person who gave me nothing. So that was my initial, like, I don't even really agree with this, but okay, I'm gonna go with the people. You know, like I'm gonna be honest, I never really understood why I wanted to disincentivize the person who even made a commitment at all to the person who was like, I don't really care about y'all. Y'all gonna shop here anyway at the Kmart.
Correct. The thing about it is there's a sense of respect me enough to lie to me.
Correct.
I know I might not get the big bonus at the end of the year, but I want my boss to be like, if you do two more deals, we're going to put you in for the runnings.
Correct.
And respect me enough to lie to me because, like, even if it turns out to be a lie, at least you went through the motions. But when you just like, oh, you're going to take whatever you can get and you just be happy to be here and shut up and dribble. You know what I mean? I think that is where. But another thing is we run off too quick based off of limited information.
That's true.
We don't say, wait a second, what is the, I'm going to do this. I'm going to commit. I'm going to conform. I'm going to contribute. But let me understand the why behind the what. And then when I understand the why, it should last longer because now I understand the sacrifice or the adjustment. I mean, I don't know if, I think it's disrespectful to call some of the things that we do sacrificial when 40 years ago, brothers and sisters was going to jail.
Correct.
Getting records.
Walking.
You know what I'm saying? Like, man. You know what I'm saying?
Walking miles upon miles upon miles.
Man, getting water holes and dogs chasing them. And, you know, for this, you know, and so those is real sacrifices. Those things you might not, that's when you hug. I am a proud Black man. I got to hug everybody in the house because I'm about to go stand on mine.
Correct.
And I might not make it back.
I might not come back. That's real. That's real sacrifice.
You know what I'm saying? They like, again.
Different. Yeah, our sacrifice
it is.
Okay, you're not going to be able to get the Gathering brand at the Target, right? Because you're no longer shopping there.
Yeah.
Which is a reasonable service, to your point. I think it's a reasonable service. I think the thing that challenges is we start off with it, right? We do get weary. And also a person like me who starts off on it, not really agreeing with it and also not really understanding the end state. That's the other piece, I think, when it comes to us doing a boycott, the selective outrages, we start with something. People don't even really understand the 5-point thrust that they have for the ending of the Target boycott. Mm-hmm. So then the question is, when does it end? Or does it fizzle off like the NFL? Remember, we were doing the NFL thing for a while with Colin Kaepernick. Nobody really ended that. It just kind of like fizzled away. Yep. And so it's like, how do we know from beginning to end when we have achieved success? And is success even achievable at this scale? Because we're not talking about a Montgomery, the capital of Alabama, or a city in Tennessee. We're talking about United States of America. How do you measure success? And some people say, well, we saw, you know, these things happen with Target, the stocks went. Yeah, yeah, I get it. But how do we measure success long term? When do we know we have made it? When do we know that this thing has been successful in perpetuity and not just for a moment?
And I think the another thing with that is there is no joy, there is no success in Target going down with us for the cause. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, So Trump come up with all this stuff, and Target's like, but I done told these good, clean Christian black folks that I'm going to do this, and so I'm going to do this. And now Target's sitting next to us, and we like, dang, Target, that's what's... And Target's like, no, man, you, I was $1 billion industry fooling with you. You
know, now we both done.
Now we both... And that's the thing. We do that a lot, where we were... misery loves company, and we would rather have you sit next to me and feel like you was down for the cause, as opposed to you making smart decisions and saying, wait a second, I could do more here than I could in this half-baked scheme that you came up with. Because as you stated, there are thresholds to it. If you look at the civil rights movement and getting in those rooms, you know, with those leaders and having a strategy and a plan and having designated black leaders that represented us accordingly, because we don't even have that. You know, there's no go-to guy. There's no leader of the cause type of situation. But having those people who can represent and be the advocate for us with a finite understanding of this is when we've won, and until we've done this, we have not.
Yeah.
We just, if we had said, this is the situation. If we had said, hey, we're going to show our economic prowess by making this statement and show that we can move the needle 2% on Target stock, then we would have won and everybody would have, but we had that, but we were just doing it until...
I mean, because one of our objectives is that Target, I think one of them is Target has to put money into two black banks, right? Of which they have not done thus far. So how do we measure, like, so are we just like standing until they do the black banks? Now, I'm not against that. I think that's a good objective. But is that really what success looks like in this? Is just them putting, one of the other was them fulfilling their commitment to some of the DEI initiatives that they have, of which a lot of them still existed. The ones that have had the biggest challenge has been those that, as a result of the pullback and us not, you know, supporting those brands, that they're struggling. Like the woman who does Complex RX, she's a black woman out of the DMV area. She literally got on Instagram and asked the question, like, hey, listen, guys, I know we have this boycott, but also, I just got a deal with Target. Like, what do you want me to do? Do you want me, like, I just got a deal. This is supposed to be my big break. Now we're not down with them. Like, how do I survive now? And everyone's like, well, you just got to do it for the cause. But do we?
Man. You know, the tough part is, not only is it easy to say that because you're not living it, but I'm going to tell anybody that's listening to the sound of my voice, black folks will make determinations out of your pocket very easily. Like, there's a man, it's almost like an anointment that we have. So, and I'm saying that to say this, Felicia. Target makes a commitment to invest in black banks. Now, hypothetically, Target puts $2 billion in each bank. There's a subset of us, the community, that's going to say, wait a second, carry the three. They got $2 billion. What, 2 million ain't enough? Then they be like, cool, then we'll put 10 million. 10 million ain't enough. It's like, dang, what?
It's never enough.
It's just, we insatiable. We insane. If you ever went to church and they asked you for something, they look at what you got on and be like, brother,
look at you. The Lord done blessed you. I can see the glory on you.
Exactly. You're like, dang, God, I don't carry cash like I used to. Like, dang. Like, what?
We got Givelify and Tithe.
Man, you ain't lying. You ain't lying. Don't you want to be announced? That ain't what it's supposed to be about. So, but you know, back to what you're saying, there are we asking for two different things. We're asking for people to be charitable and magnanimous and provide to the community and be cool about it. You hear about, and I'm not advocating for anybody at this point, but you hear about things that Cat Williams has done for people. You hear about things that Oprah, and I know, has done for people. That it ends up coming out later, but she didn't do it for that. So what she was trying to get out of it, she got out of it. You want her to do it and then ring the bell and this and that. So therefore, if it comes a year 2025, 2027, and then she don't, you like, see, she was all about that life in 2024, 25. Now she ain't got time for us.
It's never enough. And it goes back to the question of it's easy to sit in your glass house and judge. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's the question of like, we all have a role to play, but it may not look the same for all of us, right? So, you know, with selective outrage is somebody has started a thing. Yes, we should probably support the thing, but also there are other ways you can do that. If you don't decide that the Target boycott is for you, that doesn't make you a bad Black person. It just might mean that there are other things that is more important and pressing to your community that is still going to move the needle forward, but it doesn't look like you crowding on to that boycott. Because also when we talk about selective outrage, we're talking about, okay, not Target, but again, we talk, this Kmart's still there. You still shopping at Kmart and Kmart ain't no better. I ain't gonna call them real name. Mm-hmm. They're no better. They haven't made any commitment. And there's all these other companies surrounding that we're still supporting that haven't made it a commitment also. And so you may decide that it's not Target, but maybe it's Kmart or it's whatever. And that should be still helping to move the needle forward as long as there's like an objective and a goal, to your point, that I believe should be achievable at some point. And my
fear, Gotta be a smart goal.
My fear is that I'm calling it 5-point thrust. I'm just joking. I think that's the problem. I don't even know what the things are at this point. However many things, my question is, will we ever get there? Or will I never be able to kind of walk in Target the way I like, you know? If you look at my back wall, that's all the Tabitha Brown line before we
got you.
I like them.
Right.
So yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what our end state is at this point.
The reason why it's tough is because we don't do a good job of generating a collective voice or a unified understanding of what good looks like. And nothing could have been more transparent in that regard than the numbers or the reports saying that we being Black folks and we being women, didn't support Kamala Harris. Now, here's the situation. You said you wanted this. Why not? Why couldn't it be? Blah, 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 blah. Then when we got somebody qualified, HBCU, like all these boxes is checked, then they're like, she married a white dude. What is we talking about?
Why would we want a woman to be a president? A woman can never run the country.
What do we do? So in the idea of a thing and the execution of a thing, we have to become more mature about the holistic aspect of a thing. I have a kid. I have a rule with my kid and my wife. They have, if it's something significant from an investment perspective, time or finance or something like that, they got to ask me 3 times in 6 months. Now, if they still own it, then we going to get this viola.
Chris?
I don't know about your family. My family get a lot of wild ideas. My wife, and I'm an executor. So I'll tell y'all a story. I'll get in trouble for it later. We live in out of state, and at the time, my wife went to work, and my wife is really into real estate. Like her corporate job now is real estate finance. Okay, so she worked for a big bank, all of that. So her anointment, God blessed her to where it all came together. But at this time, when the marriage was struggling because of my attitude, she kept talking about housing, and we had just built the house, and she was talking about how she enjoyed this, that. So me, being the dutiful husband that I am, bought real estate for dummies and how to become your own broker and all that. And I'm trying to sow into the passion that I see.
Nobody asked you for that.
No.
Ain't nobody asked you for that.
No. Ain't nobody told you I want to take a test. Ain't nobody told you I want to take a test.
All that.
Man.
Ain't nobody asked you to be no problem solver. Nobody asked you for your problem solving.
Exactly. But to tie that into us culturally, we sit around and talk about stuff and give others the impression that we want these things. And that's true. When they show up, they like, look, black people, we gave you a candidate. Look, black people, we gave you a cause. We gave you, you're like, what else you got?
I don't know. Right? That look a little suspect. Yeah. It's too good to be true. No, I get it. But it begs the question, barring the election, if we're just thinking about something like boycotts on different things, mm-hmm. can we really do it at that scale? Or does reimagining look like smaller wins on smaller scales, right? Local activists, local things where we take those smaller wins and then make them larger, or we partner together. We saw with the Target boycott, like we tried to partner together, targetfast.com with what Tamika Mallory and the lady in Minnesota, I can't remember her name, supposed to all be together. But as soon as Jamal Bryan said the boycott was over, it quickly fell apart. And now everybody's like bashing everybody and rah, rah, rah. And it really killed the... So again, it's this thing of it falls apart really quickly when we try to bring smaller entities together. Do I think it's possible? Yes, but I think we get more bang for our buck when we are looking at, I think Montgomery boycott was scale. Everybody wants to use it as the example for the world. I think it's still scale in terms of this is a large city with black people who've gotten together to say that this is what we're going to support. And they were successful. And to mimic that is to mimic that in size, in the same size, not to scale up. I don't personally think that saying that what would happen to Montgomery boycott can happen nationwide. I think it's a different time, different place, different era. But what would it look like in our communities, in our states, to try to draw that kind of change, to your point, in legislation? Because that's where the ticket happens, mm-hmm. right? When we talk mm-hmm. about what really happened with the Million Man March and all of those things, it was Martin Luther King meeting with the president. Like him having that line is what got that, of course, some other stuff, but mostly him having that line of communication to those who can change policy and make long-term change. And I don't think I know we don't currently have it now, but how do we work towards that in the future? Because to your point, a Target boycott, if we're successful, let's say we get our 5-point thrust, cool. Okay, then what's mm-hmm. next? And how does mm-hmm. that move the needle in policy and really help to change our communities? I just don't think we're there.
And I think that lasting change is important because my mom used to always say it ain't about getting stuff, it's about keeping stuff. You'll see people with that car, you'll see people with that whatever, and then you'll see them 2 months later and be like, why is he on the bus stop? It's just, that's the nature of how things are.
It was good while it lasted.
Man, but those short wins and those short-sighted goals are something that I see far too often. Mm. And I see it from a personal perspective where I've been lame for years to my cousins. I couldn't have that corporate job. Is it the insurance? Is it the same check every 2 weeks? What is it that makes you not want to, you know what I'm
saying? It's like, you don't want stability? Is that not appealing to you?
But they've been programmed with the entrepreneur, you know, you got to do work for your, you got, do you know how hard that is? That you got to eat, you got to kill everything you eat, you got to this, that, you got to, man, people don't want to, this game has been established. If you learn the rules, you can play it accordingly. The issue with us is we now lack patience and we turn on each other quickly. That Montgomery boycott was a long time. It lasted for months, almost over a year.
Almost a year, yeah. People don't realize
that level of discomfort was something that they signed up for up front and said, listen, this is what we're trying to accomplish. It's probably going to take this. Even in the I Have a Dream, I might not get there with you. He knew, like, man, Moses said the same thing. I'm not going to, like, any great leader, I'm not going to be, look, it's going to take so long.
Correct.
But now we like, hold on. We started saying stuff Tuesday. We started saying stuff Sunday. What have they answered our demands? That's not how demands work. Even anybody that's ever sued the insurance company will wait you out. Like, facts. You gotta bunker down and be ready for this grind and show facts. Them that you're serious to where they like, okay, fine then. You know what I'm saying? When I go get a car, I want to leave there with the dude like, don't ever come back here. Don't ever. Fine then. I always go, and it's funny, me and my wife talk about this all the time. She's like, why when we go get a car, you always do all this research, and then instead of us being able to go and have lunch and buy the car, we show up at like 8:12 because they close at 9. We gonna be here. You gonna be hungry.
Want to get home? Is a way to out.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I know you get off at 9. I know it's emptied in the mug every time, like, we go get a car. It'd be emptied in the mug in there. It'd be me, dude, and the finance man. That's like, what's going on? He keep going.
Do you want to go home? What kind of deal you want to make?
Man, we can leave here because they told not to let you leave. Dang, it's real game.
But Chris, you a beast.
in the concept of having a destination and being committed, it's the conviction. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You have to be committed to, you have to have the courage of your conviction. And that's what you're saying. But understanding what the conviction is, like you said, I'm a rider. I'm a ride with y'all. Where are we going? And they're like, we going. And he's like, oh, okay.
Where am I going?
Where are we going? Come on, at the people before we leave.
Right. Corporate geek in me is like, what are the smart objectives?
Yeah.
Are they measurable?
That's right.
I don't know.
Right. That's right. You gotta have it. Did you want to? You want to get off any of the clips that we have? You want to get the van off?
Yeah, the higher learning one.
Had a couple of different opportunities and flashpoint moments to actually make structural and lasting change, and we're whiffing. We didn't get anything out of the George Floyd stuff. Nothing. Our ancestors took these flashpoint cultural moments and then gave niggas citizenship and then said, hey, we taking it straight to Washington. We gonna put it on the books that we cannot be treated this way. And their sacrifices live on in perpetuity. We have not been able to do that. Not on the whole. What I will say is there are activists working every single day, getting laws passed at state and local levels and stuff like that. But the sweeping change that we thought might have come and should have come after the George Floyd marches did not get undergirded by law. The will wasn't there. We couldn't move the needle. So the wins that we have to establish for ourselves have to be wins that are at local organizing and cultural levels. So you have to support those people. You ain't got to march with them, but you got to send them some money. And when there is a boycott that is working against a corporation, when we get an opportunity to show that we are not servants to cultural power in every single aspect, it's got to at least be meaningful. I'm not saying all y'all ain't got to go to Target. I'm not judging nobody.
So let me ask you this, though, Felicia. Did we do a bad job of marketing our success? Because unfortunately, if it ain't on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, something like that, that's all we know as far as the measure of success we've had thus far. So did we as a community, as Black folks, Black leaders, not let us know, hey, it's working. Hey, it's this, that. And did we not denounce Bryant's proclamation fast enough? Did we not have a person on the other end be like, hold up, don't listen to him? Remember when they told us stop drinking Cristal and everybody stopped drinking? I was like, look, I never had Cristal, but now I'm like, okay, if that's what we own, that's what we own.
I think it's a little bit, so I don't think the marketing was bad. I think for me, and this might be the intellectual in my mind on, they kept saying like, hey, we're moving the needle on the Target thing. We see Target stocks going down. They've had to change CEO. They've done blah, blah, blah. The challenge with that messaging is the same time that Target stocks was going down, everybody's stocks were going down. It was a economic downturn time. So the question that arose in my mind was, how much is this is us moving the needle? How much is this just the economic
correlation, point, right? Causation? Yep.
Correct. Yep. The second piece was, to your point, when Jamal Bryant came out, he did come back and rebuttal really quickly, but the divisiveness that occurred really spliced the whole thing for me. Mm-hmm. Now, because depending on how you signed up for the movement, depending on how you felt about it, I really did sign up at targetfast.com with the Black churches under the Jamal Bryant umbrella. I didn't sign up with Tamika Marley, the lady in, you know, Minnesota. So when it started to get messy, it was just like, ooh, like we couldn't just say, hey, Jamal Brown, you did a bad thing, slap our hand, let's move forward. Then it became less attack each other and who really started it and who's really, and it just blurries the message. And so people were left wondering like, okay, but Jamal Brown did say these couple things happened. Okay, well then what's the end goal? And then people started bringing up the NFL thing. So I think it's just the, when we start to fight each other, then it just becomes like, oh, what are we doing? Like, are we here again? But I don't think the marketing was off. I think it was just once Jamal Bryant thing happened, it really did put a bad taste in people's mouths about our ability to be able to come together and stay together. And when somebody makes a misstep, like Jamal, I don't know if it was misstep or he was going, I don't know what that was. But whenever he came out, it just really put a damper on the movement for me personally. I don't know about nobody else.
Let me ask you this. Are we smart enough? I'm going to be controversial here. Are we smart enough to understand what a movement is and separate the message from the messenger? Because what I've seen, especially for us, is that we take something that has, let's just say the rainbow push, okay?
Oh,
if you put it on paper, man, listen, if you put it on paper and you talk about the theory or the sentiment of hope and all this other stuff, it resonates, makes sense, and blah, blah, blah. When you align it with a human being.
Yeah.
And then a human being shows its human flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And you let that sully the entire dynamic. You didn't understand what this was really about in the first place. You was riding out because a cool name was associated with it as opposed to what it was actually standing for. Colin Kaepernick has never been the coolest dude in the world to me. But I understood what he was talking about as far as black and brown people getting killed without repercussion and without explanation. That resonates today, tomorrow, 27 years from now.
Yeah.
But when you tie a name to it and then you say, and luckily he's done a good job of calibrating his exposure because they can't wait for him to get a DUI. They can't wait for him, something, anything. And they'd be like, and this is your champion?
Yeah.
This is your, you know what I'm saying? Why do we fall for that every time?
But I think it's not that we're not smart enough. It's that we innately want a leader. Now, I'm going to go
Felicia, that's a whole other podcast, man. You're going to have to do this.
But if we go,
myself.
I'm a PK. If we go biblical, in the Bible, there were no kings. We asked for it. We wanted something or somebody to look to. Okay. And even in today's time, we want a leader. Now, whether or not we've been given one. So when we attach a movement, we attach it to a person because we really want a person to look to follow, to give us guidance. And oftentimes, to your point, then we make them this king. And to your point, humanistically, they can't, you know, as a human, they can't live up to the standards that we're giving them. But we really do want a leader. So we want somebody to look to, just like we had Martin Luther King. We had, you know, Malcolm X. We wanted Jesse Jackson to be a leader, but also we have to realize that behind that leader is still a human. And regardless to what a person does in indiscretion in their personal life that may be immoral, that doesn't take away from what they did for the movement. And so I don't think we can separate the movement from the man, but we have to stop making our leaders invincible, meaning that they're not flawed and can make mistakes. They can make mistakes. That doesn't take away from the message. But I also think that the landscape also does it on purpose, right? Like when Martin Luther King was going hard, you know what the FBI was doing, and they were doing it to say, look at your leader. Like he's not what he is. But to your point, I wish we could separate and say, this, I don't think we can, but I also think we really want leadership. We really want somebody to follow, which is why social media is so big, right? And because we like, that's why we have influencers, because we want someone to tell us something, to influence us, to lead us to a product. That's what our society has become. And in some ways, it's always been that way, but now it's amplified because we have Al Gore's internet.
Where, as you said, you know, so poetically, where there is no vision, the people will perish.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of true vision, though, is not just my mom used to always accuse my brother of picking up other people's babies. So basically, if the kids down the street want a lemonade stand, all of a sudden we get he want a Kool-Aid stand. Like it was always somebody else's baby that he was picking up, as opposed to having something that he was convicted to and that he was drawn to. we have to also teach our children not to be such sheep or such lemming.
That's
and
true.
Actually understand the cause, understand what resonates and vibrates within your frequency. And then you go, because I say this all the time. I believe with all my heart and soul, never met the man. Martin Luther King would have did that if 3 people was behind him or 3 million people was behind him. He was on that. He was about that life.
He was
about that life. You know what I mean? So a lot of those things wasn't for likes and thumbs up. And it's him going to seminary, him, you know, becoming an alpha. He had a resume that he came with.
And it was a calling for him. To your point, it was felt like this was his movement. And he too, you know, suffered all anxiety and all the things because he knew that he was meant to call this, you know, to lead this journey, but it was just a lot of pressure.
Absolutely.
And even he, as a man, succumbed to pressure.
Absolutely. And the propaganda now that can over inundate you when you click on something or see something or whatever. I mean, they've gotten a lot smarter. They being everyone. I'm not just talking about white folks. Everyone has gotten a lot smarter.
Yes.
I was on vacation and I was listening to a podcast and they started talking about taxes in your 401k. And it was like, if you don't have this, you might get taxed at a different. And for 2 days, I was seeing what my stuff, like I let these people then talk me off my square after I came up with this plan and was happy with it. Not to let these randos, you know what I'm saying, get in my mind.
Lead you.
And make me
correct. It's just like these supplements. I was telling my friend today, like, I want to buy this thing that tells me it's supposed to clear my liver. The doctor ain't never said anything's wrong with my liver, but now they convince me that if I drink this, I'm going to have energy. I'm going to be better because my liver had
karate playing the piano. Ain't never did none of them things, right?
But now I'm just looking it up. Do I not know that my liver is bad?
Man, you know what I mean? It's sophisticated. It's very sophisticated.
We all are succumbing to all the messages that's coming our way and the influence, to your point, and you got to like sift it out. And I think it's so challenging for kids. I can say for kids today, growing up where they've had was social media from a time where we didn't have any of that. And we just learned how to just like sit, listen, watch, you know, read a book, or you had to watch TV. Like, we didn't have the sophistication. And so we learned how to reason in logic. So now when all these things are coming at us, we can stop like you did and say, let me do some research. Mm-hmm. But they've always been inundated with messaging and never, I think, their brains never had the opportunity to just really have a moment to do logic and reasoning. And so we're struggling a little bit with the other generation, which makes it harder to say like, hey, think about the messaging. Think about who it's coming from. Don't get caught up in the leader. Really think about what that person's saying. Research it. Figure it out. If this is what you really think it is, do you really believe this? Is this something that you want to support? If it's not, understand why you don't want to support it and then figure out what you do want to support. That takes a lot of sophistication, a lot of thought, a lot of introspection, and we just don't do that.
Well, I think another thing that makes it hard to do that is the sheer number of haters that we tend to have in our presence, either by design or by accident, either by family or by, you know, friendship, because just like with the Jay-Z thing, Jay-Z had no reason to come at Colin Kaepernick. That was a stray. They call it strays now. These kids call it strays now. Yeah, they call it strays.
But he didn't ask for that.
Here's a situation. With a good heart and a good spirit, you decided to ride out with the cause and not buy the baubles and the knickknacks from Target. Then the thing don't go as somebody had intended. I know for a fact there's somebody that wanted to tell you, see, you could have been having this and that and the third, but you trying to ride out with the, and it's like, dang, just be cool. Like we have an inability, we as Black folks have an inability to just be cool because of the punching down effect.
Yep.
And wanting to say, I told you, everybody that had an ex-boyfriend, everybody that had an ex-girlfriend, but you get with the dude that your mama don't like, as soon as he lie or something, I told you he was.
Like, he was so-and-so. We wouldn't like him. You don't listen. I told you he wasn't going to be no good. But you know.
4 years, mama. What is your talk? You done spent out of here, ate her food and everything. And now, because you know what I'm saying? But we have to cure that
Yes.
We have to cure that. And I call it the Jerry Springer effect. And it's the effect of people were so inundated by Jerry Springer because you could look at that and say, they're worse than us. They're crazier than us. They have less than us. And it's white folks on there. And it's, you know, it's trailer trash. It's this, that. It was a concept of you feel taller because you're pushing someone else down.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say crabs in a barrel. What I want to say is we have to be able to support and uplift each other. And when you have something going on, I'm going to encourage you. And if and when it doesn't work out, I'm going to say, look, I didn't know any better or else I would have told you.
Correct. Correct.
Man, I figured. We be figuring like a mug. I figured.
Correct. Yes. We have to be okay with letting people. If somebody wants to boycott, cool. Let them boycott.
Right. Right.
We have to be educated enough to know if we agree or disagree. And it's okay to disagree. Right. But to the clip, his point is that also sometimes we have to support, even though if we don't fully agree.
That is absolutely correct.
And if we're not going to support that, we have to figure out what we're going to support, because the only way we're going to move the margins as a people, I believe, is at the margins, at the small wins locally, community. So if you don't want to support Target Bar boycott, cool. What are you going to do, though? What are you going to support? What are you going to do to make the community better, to make our people better? Figure out what that is and zone in on it. And then don't let people make you feel bad because you haven't subscribed to what they subscribe, because we all are on a journey. We're all doing a thing. Just make sure you're doing something. Something. Mm-hmm. Might not be Target, but make it something.
And this is the appropriate section where you were saying, you blessed, you highly favored. You could give $10, $5.
Correct.
We did a show a couple weeks ago, and the person, it was about philanthropy, and the person was saying, instead of, and it was a charitable organization in Connecticut, and they were saying that instead of trying to go after the person to give $1,000, go after 10 people to give $100. Go after 100 people to give, you know what I mean? That type of thing, it incrementally.
Yes.
Same thing with votes. Incrementally, we can move things. But if you isolate yourself and just be a me firster, then you can't then complain about the results of the world as is, because it's full of me firsters.
Yep.
You got to have some reflective therapy in that regard. But man, I sure appreciate it. So tell us where we can find you. Tell us how things is going. I want to give some climb action now. I'll give you some climb.
Well, the climb is the way that I give back, right? You know, that's helping women of color to continue to move and elevate in this space, because we need, this is how change is made, right? Getting women in leadership to change those boardrooms. That's how we're going to do it. So at the-climb.org is where you can learn more about the climb. All of our social media platforms is join the climb at join the climb on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm gonna be honest, I'm the most active on LinkedIn. So please, our membership is free if you want to join the organization and join our movement. But we're all about making sure that as a community, we continue to build the pipeline and then build more women up to go into leadership and give them a support system that we already don't have.
Will y'all have anything coming up in the 2026 that's left that people can look into or get start saving up for, putting something in the piggy bank?
So we actually just started our paid membership subscription called the Inner Circle. And the Inner Circle is really for that woman who's like, yeah, I did all the regular membership, but I really want to zone in. I want to dive into why things are not moving the way that it is. So they get personal coaching from me. We have small groups there and other resources to really help you to get from whether you are individual contributor trying to become a team leader, or you're trying to get into executive. We're going to help you to get there quicker in individualized focus support. So the Inner Circle is open right now. And if you go to our website, you can learn more about the Inner Circle also, or hit me up on LinkedIn and we can talk.
That's what's up, man. Yeah. I so appreciate you. This is always a good time. Thank you guys for tuning in. I might have did something with the chat, pushed the button, got excited. You know, it was obviously a big night for me. And you know what I'm saying? So that's all right. It all
covered out the worst.
Man, so, but make sure y'all put it on the comments when y'all watch this again, because it's absolutely worth watching twice. So I want to thank you for coming on, making sure that you're supporting us. I also want to remind you as we wrap this up that A Black Executive Perspective is more than just one podcast. It's a growing network of conversations designed to challenge perspectives and expand understanding. So check out Need to Know with Dr. Singer Burton. Check out Pull Up Speak Up. We're going to have Felicia on there soon when we get a roundtable of people having varied opinions and being able to maturely talk about things in the discourse. Check out A Mixed Executive Perspective hosted by Grace Food and Corey. It's different shows and different perspectives, but one mission, making uncomfortable conversations comfortable. We also want to remind you to the reason why we do this is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve that, we want to embrace LESS. The L is for learn. The E is for empathize. The S is first S is for share. The second S is for stop. You want to just stop that around you. Sometimes you don't even want that foolishness around you. Let people know where you stand and be like, nah, I ain't even on that. And if everybody could embrace LESS, then less will become more. And that's the world we want to live in. So as always, we are not here to tell you what to think. We're here to challenge how deeply you've thought about it. And that's what Felicia said today. Like, comment, subscribe, check out The Climb. But share this conversation with someone who might have a different opinion or issue than you do and see what they say. And until next Tuesday, tell a friend to tell a friend, and we'll see you then.